pitching, and the lights went out, the power went out. And we ended up finishing the pitch by illuminating our faces with our phones, and they blackberried in their other partners.
I'm Karen Etkin, and this is the first episode of the German Technologist podcast. I interviewed Max Samkov, a partner in Third Act Ventures, a New York-based VC that invests in HDAC. Max, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here, Karen.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, what brought you into HDAC in general and investing in HDAC?
Sure. So what brought me into HDAC was something that happened to my grandmother going on about 8 years ago now. I was living out in the San Francisco Bay Area, and my whole family is from the East Coast of the U.S., so my grandmother was in New Jersey. And she was just at that point where she just couldn't take care of herself anymore. And my grandfather had passed away a couple years before. The house she was in was just too big for her to manage herself. She started to fall. All the classic things that happen to us as we get older. And so my father and his siblings did what most people do in this country if they have the ability to. They looked around for a nice senior facility, and they moved her in. And without putting too much blame on the facility, the fact that she was being taken out of her home that she was in for 70 plus years, away from her family, her sister used to live around the corner from her, she'd see and talk to for hours every day. All of a sudden, she was in this whole new place all by herself, and she just instantly sank into a depression. Like, she just couldn't, she didn't have the energy to meet new people, to make a new community. And it was shocking how basically overnight she became just a different person. And so me being on the West Coast, as soon as I realized this, I wanted to do something about it. I couldn't be there every day or even every week. So I looked around for technology that would help me stay in better touch with her. And it was frustrating how little existed 8 years ago. And it was particularly frustrating for me because my background is in mobile engineering. I've been making iPhone applications since Apple started letting third parties do that. And I've been seeing toddlers use their parents' iPhones and giggling happily. There was no reason why in this day and age where technology no longer comes with a 50-page manual, it's just turn on, tap, and go, that my grandmother couldn't be getting a lot of benefit from this, besides the fact that no one was thinking about her. No one cared about her and her peers. And so that experience kind of sat with me as I went through my career transition. And so when I started investing, I kind of checked back in on the space and saw that we're getting there, but there's still a lot that needs to be done.
That is a very cool personal story. Can you tell us a bit about your entrepreneurial background?
Sure. So I started my career as a mobile software developer. It was, again, right around the time that Apple started letting anyone make iPhone applications. And I had friends, I was in college at the time, like dropping out left and right, starting companies. It was just insane and crazy and so much fun. So I actually started my career working at a small startup that was doing mobile advertising. So if you've ever seen those little banners at the top or bottom of your iPhone application, I'm really sorry. I helped make some of those.
You should be
I won't take all credit, certainly, but I definitely did that. But so I'm sorry for that. I apologize. And then I worked at, that got acquired, and then I worked at a couple other companies, again, early stage, started by ex-university friends of mine and then ex-colleagues of mine, all in the mobile space. So another one that was doing mobile application discovery. So at that time, you know, within a couple of years, there had already been an explosion into, like, I don't think it was like 100,000 plus apps, and that was thought to be a lot. And so we were trying to help people sort through it by trying to surface what their friends were using, using as a proxy for the fact that if your friends are using it, you might find it useful too. Now there are, I don't know how many billion apps in the App Store. So obviously that problem is still existent, but we were trying to solve that a little bit. We raised some venture capital money for that, which is pretty cool. We actually pitched in the dark, which is pretty interesting. So all the lights out, there was like a blackout all over Sand Hill Road we were pitching, and the lights went out, the power went out. We were actually conferencing in the company's other offices in Hong Kong and I believe Shanghai, and we ended up finishing the pitch by illuminating our faces with our phones, and they blackberried in their other partners, which was pretty interesting. And we actually got it, which was pretty cool.
It's actually a really interesting concept for a pitch event, pitching in the dark.
Pitching in the dark. It's good practice, honestly. Considering how often like presentations don't work, every entrepreneur should get used to like giving their pitch without any kind of visual aid, without any slides, because it's going to happen. Your demo isn't going to work, the slides aren't going to work, and you just got to roll with it. And that's how you really crush it.
Definitely. Can you tell us a little bit about the fund, like when you raised it, who are the other partners, size, sure, if you're willing to share?
Sure. So I'm still raising it. It's my first fund, so I know it's going to take a while. I'm the only partner, so it's just me, which makes it really easy. It means I can be really fast to make decisions, which is great. I've raised just under $3 million now, but I am still going. This area needs a lot of funding.
It does. It does need a lot of funding. And what's your aim? Like, what are you planning on getting?
That's a good question. I would love to reach $10 million. That would be a good first round size. That would help me reach not only into the pre-seed and seed that I'm doing, but help me push a little bit more into that A round, which I've seen a lot of companies have some trouble with. Once you reach past that A round, you're on like the traditional VC path, and you can get those later investors involved and people get to know you. But until that point, it can be pretty challenging. So that's my goal, to kind of fill that funding gap.
Cool. And I think you're one of very few, if not the only VCs that invest in pre-seed or seed HTech startups. Am I correct?
Yep. That's as far as I'm aware. I mean, there are a couple others that I know that you've chronicled a little bit. There's Katie Fikes, Generator Ventures. I don't really know how early she goes, but I believe she goes pretty early. And then there's also Zebra Linkage, which also goes pretty early, but again, I'm not sure how early. But that's really why I'm in this space. I saw this funding gap and this need to help entrepreneurs get off the ground in order to create more innovation in this ecosystem. So that's really where I'm trying to focus.
What is your investment thesis? What you're looking for when you're DD in a company?
Broadly, I'm interested in any company whose main goal is to improve the lives of older adults and or their caregivers. And so I have to keep it pretty broad because there are a lot of things out there and a lot of different ways that older adults are living and need help. And so whether they need help aging in place and staying in their home, whether they need help with home care, whether they are in assisted living facilities and are, you know, need some help. Again, like my grandmother moving out of the depression, meeting other people, maybe helping the staff be more efficient too, or driving the cost down. So anything across that spectrum interests me. And then in terms of what I look for are really three pretty simple things. The first thing that I look for is I need to know that you can actually build what you say you're going to build. Right? If you say you're going to build this product, I need to see at least a prototype or something to show me you actually have the skills to pay the bills, as they say. Secondly, I need to know that what you're making is really hitting a need to the point where people are willing to pay for it. Recognizing that my background is not in this industry, I don't, as much, you know, all the research I do doesn't necessarily mean that I have a great sense of what the market really needs. So you need to show me that you've been able to convince at least a few players in this space to pay you some money, even if it's not a lot, just to know that, yes, this is actually meeting. And then third, really importantly in this industry, I think above others, often in this space, the people that are paying for your product are not the ones that are using it every day. Oftentimes it's an administrator or someone higher up, whereas someone, a caregiver or the seniors themselves, is actually using it on a daily basis. I need to know that they actually enjoy using your product, because this space is littered with many great products with great intentions that end up sitting in drawers or going unused because they really weren't designed to make the end user happy. So those are the three things I need to see.
What made you make the investments you currently have in your portfolio?
I mean, honestly, it was some combination of that. A lot of it comes down to the last two. Certainly, when I'm talking, so in my process, I always make sure to talk to both the people that have bought the product as well as people that are using it, because that's the only way I can get that information. And when I hear a lot of excitement from both of those, that's when I get really excited. So when I hear a lot of excitement from the buyer who says, you know, that this is really solving a core need, that it's really making their job easier or making their residents so much happier or whatever it is, and I can expand from that use from that person and see how big the market is, how many people are like that, how many firms are out there, that gets me excited. And then if I also am talking to the end user, whether it's the older adult, the caregiver, whoever, and they are really excited about using it and they're telling their friends and they're like begging for more, that's when I get really excited and that's when I invest.
So do the startups that approach you need to have some traction or?
So they need to have some early traction. In general, if they're selling B2B, I need to see at least a few pilots that have converted into successful sales. That shows me again that there's a market out there, they're solving a need. If they're consumer, I need to see at least a prototype and ideally some early sales. The hardest thing about working in this industry, at least for me, is that I have to constantly remind myself that I am not the target user for any of this. Unfortunately, my grandparents have passed away now. Fortunately, my parents aren't there yet. So I am not, my opinion on any of these products doesn't really matter because they're not made for me. They're not supposed to help me. So I have to take my own subjective opinions out of it and really just look at the numbers. Are the people that this product is made for, are they getting benefit from it? Are they willing to pay for it? So I need to see some early traction in those to know that it's actually hitting the market, because again, what I think of something doesn't really matter.
So if I'm an entrepreneur and I want to fill a gap in the age tech market, what are the current gaps that you would suggest that I go after?
One of the biggest gaps in the market right now is there's a huge caregiver shortage across the spectrum, senior living, home care, even family caregivers, honestly. And there are no real good answers for solving that. One of the biggest issues in both of those industries right now is employee turnover. I forget the number offhand, but I believe that home care industry average turnover reached a high of like 82% recently, which is insane. It means that 4/5 of their employees turnover get changed every year. They have to hire that many people. I mean, they just lose so much institutional knowledge and they spend so much money retraining, rehiring, and then losing these people. Anything that can be done to help retain those employees, keep them happy, reduce that turnover would be huge. Additionally, on the other side, anything you can do to make hiring easier, also great. Anything you can do to help bring more caregivers in or increase the supply, so incredibly helpful and important. And there are not many great solutions out there. There are a few people that are working on it, but there's still a lot of room. Other areas that are pretty interesting. One, it's a big challenge, but most senior living facilities are running on software that is not particularly efficient. They have these kind of big bloated electronic health record systems that they're using that don't really do a lot of things they need to do, and particularly don't really focus enough on making the workflow kind of easy and seamless, and instead make it kind of patchy and except there's a lot of duplicate work happening, and don't make the facility more efficient. And so anyone who wants to take on that challenge would be welcome. It is certainly not easy, and there are some pretty big incumbents in there, but there is definitely room for some disruption in there as well.
For sure. About the caregiver, about the employee turnover over here in Israel, I know that the employees just switch companies. They don't necessarily stop being caregivers. So what is it like in the US?
So you definitely see some of that, and particularly in times when, as a caregiver, particularly if we're looking at home care, as a caregiver, if your client, for whatever reason, is no longer a client of that organization, be it because they pass away or they move into assisted living or something else, the company often doesn't have another client just ready to go for you. And you're not going to just stick around for months not being paid. You're going to go and move on somewhere else. So that happens a lot. Also, a lot of employees don't feel particularly supported by their organizations. They're kind of thrown into their jobs without a ton of training and dealing with some individuals, some cases that are particularly challenging. I mean, if you are assigned to someone who has mild dementia and have had no kind of training and what that really means and how best to take care of them, you're going to be in a really challenging situation where you feel like you're not really being put in a place where your company's really helping you out, and you're going to go find somewhere where you do feel more supported. The other thing is that, at least from the home care agencies that I've talked to and even senior living, a lot of people are actually moving into other kinds of jobs, other service jobs. There's a lot of talk in the industry now about caregivers leaving and starting to work at fast food restaurants, McDonald's, or Amazon warehouses. Now that the minimum wage has been risen so high, so that it's actually can be a much easier job in those places, maybe more physically demanding, but emotionally much easier. Yeah. So caregivers are leaving in all sorts of ways.
Well, we definitely have a problem, a global issue there. Where do you see this space, the age tech space, in 5 to 10 years?
It's a good question. I can tell you where I'd like to see it, and then I can tell you where I think it'll actually be.
Okay.
So where I'd like to see it, I'd like to see every senior facility having Wi-Fi. I know it's crazy to think that in this day and age, not every facility or everywhere you even walk into now, in every restaurant you go into, has Wi-Fi now. But so many senior facilities do not have even basic kind of infrastructure. And without the basic infrastructure, you can't build any other kind of technology solutions to really improve that facility for the residents, for the staff, for efficiency, none of it. So I would love to see that happen. I don't think we're going to be there in 10 years, but we are certainly getting closer. I would like to see organizations who employ caregivers in this industry investing a lot more in training their workforces, as well as investing in employee happiness, HR, head of people, whatever you want to call it. Investing in actually valuing their workforce, connecting with them, figuring out how to keep them happy and supporting them. Because this is not an easy job to be in, and it doesn't pay a lot. So you really need to be so thankful and really reward your employees that are in there. I think we're starting to get there, and companies are starting to realize how important this is. A few facilities and organizations have actually started hiring head of people, which is phenomenal. Wow. I think we're still a long way off, but I think we're going to see a lot more of it.
So that's your wish list.
Yes.
And what do you think is actually going to happen?
What's actually going to happen? I mean, we're still going to have a lot of facilities that don't have Wi-Fi. We're still going to have a lot of turnover. I think it will likely go down in the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, it's hard to imagine it going up from like 80%+, but I think it will go down. I think we're also going to see, more facilities adopting technology. I also think, unfortunately, we're going to see some big technology flops. Recently, there was the care.com scandal, where it turned out that they weren't doing any sort of background screening for their caregivers, which is just not something that's acceptable in an industry like this, where you're working with individuals who can necessarily take care of themselves or speak up for themselves or advocate for themselves. I think we're going to see a lot of technology that's being promised now, predictive analytics for one, AI, all these kind of buzzwords that get installed and don't live up to the hype. And we're going to see a lot of organizations that feel burned and kind of shun technology for a while, which is going to set us back a little bit. But I also think there's going to be a lot of good. There are a lot of great companies out there that are doing really meaningful work. And so we will see progress as well as some setbacks.
Okay, I'll take that. If you could give one piece of advice to entrepreneurs in aging, what would it be?
I'm actually going to cheat and give two. Sorry, Karen.
Okay.
The first that I'm going to give is make sure that you are including your end users in your design iterative process. Make sure that you're always testing your product with end users. Again, because recognize, unless you are of the appropriate age or life situation for end users, your opinion of something, just like mine, isn't the most important. I'd say it probably matters more than mine, because mine doesn't matter at all. But it's not the most important. What matters is the end users and whether they enjoy using your product, whether it makes sense for them. So make sure you're constantly testing with them. And the other thing that I'll say, which is related, so it's like one and a half things I'll tell them not to. Make sure that you're not only testing to see whether the product improves their life or helps them. Make sure it also fits into their image of who they are. It's kind of a wishy-washy thing to say, but there are a lot of products that are developed that don't take into account the fact that no one wants to feel old or frail. I don't care if you're 25 or 105. And products that make people feel that way don't get used. So there are, I can't tell you how many people I've met who don't use walkers or won't take them outside and won't leave their house because they don't want to be seen that way. And there are other products, I'm not going to name names, that do the same thing. You put them on and it's like admitting that you're old and frail, and so they go unused even though they could provide so much benefit. So make sure that your product really fits in with people's images of themselves. It makes them feel happy, cool, not judged, et cetera.
That is very good advice. And I think we're seeing more and more products do just that than we used to 5 or 10 years ago. And so, Max, thank you so much for your time and valuable advice. You can find Max on Medium and sign up to his newsletter. He's doing an excellent age tech roundup once a month, right?
Yep, once a month.
Max Zamkov, I'm going to link to his stuff below this. Max, thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate it.
That's all we have for today. If you want to receive updates on upcoming blog posts or podcast episodes, visit thegerontechnologist.com and subscribe for updates. And of course, feel free to use the contact page on my website to write to me and give me feedback about this episode or tell me about what you want to hear next. Bye.